Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. Our guests today are Ellen Rogan and Lisa King. They are co-authors of the New York Times bestseller of the same name, Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. Lisa King is an executive director at Invesco Consulting and has spent 15 years in financial services as a national speaker and developer of educational programs. Ellen Rogan is the founder of a wealth management firm in the Chicago area and is also founder of the Abundance Activist Movement, whose mission is to help the world think and act more prosperously. During today's teleclass, Ellen and Lisa will show you how to get beyond the daunting details of financial planning and instead to design your investments to create the life you've envisioned. Soon you'll feel more in control of your finances and on the road to the things that matter most. A reminder, we'll be sharing highlights from today's call on Twitter. You can follow along and join the conversation at Penn Women, at Texas Women, at Mass Women, and in California at WTRMRK. That's for Watermark. And a reminder, today's class will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you registered through Eventbrite, you'll receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. And now let's welcome Ellen Rogan and Lisa King.
Hi, Ellen, we're so glad to be here.
Great to have you both. We have quite a few questions. I want to start with this one. You both have an interesting take on money and prosperity. Could you share with us how you see the importance of combining the intuitive, creative part of money with the more practical, analytical side? And Ellen, let's start with you.
Great. So, you know, in years of being a financial advisor, one of the things that I found was that having just the right strategies and analytics and doing all the right things doesn't necessarily make someone happy and prosperous. And what we've come to know is that when you can combine kind of more right brain or what I call more ethereal types of things with the left brain more material types of ways approaching money is where the beauty really happens. So, for example, if you only looked at the numbers and the analytics and had even had lots and lots of money but came home and kicked your dog and fought with your partner, like most people would agree that wouldn't be very good. And on the other side, if you were only to look at your intuitive hits on things and sat on your meditation pillow and chanted om waiting for the universe to provide and never took any action, that doesn't usually work either. And magic really happens when you can combine both of these sides of things so that there's meaning behind the way that you manage your money.
Great. Now, you talk about creating a visual financial plan. Lisa, could you tell us what you mean by that?
I would love to. So the name of our book is obviously Picture Your Prosperity, and part of the reason for that is that we encourage our readers to literally, quite literally, build a picture, a financial and life picture of what they would like to see for themselves moving forward. And we're huge believers in the power of that, and we've been fascinated by the research we've done for the book. It turns out that the power of visualization is much more impactful than anyone ever realized. And there's been a great deal of research, especially recently, about the power of visualizing. There's actually agreement now among neurologists that we stimulate the same part of our brain when we visualize ourselves completing an action as we do when we actually complete it. So this has been research quoted by Dr. Srini Pillay, who's a Harvard Med School graduate. He wrote a book called Your Brain in Business, and he talks about this concept. And the reason that we mention it is because if you just think about that in simple terms, if I asked you right now to think about raising your left arm in the air, what part of your brain is activating right now is exactly the same part of your brain that activates when you literally raise your left arm in the air. And so it has this incredibly direct connection between what we visualize ourselves doing and what we actually do. So this, for example, is a concept that athletes have realized for a very long time. If you talk to almost any athlete about their visual game, they'll almost always light up. Tennis players will talk about their serve, and golfers will talk about their swing, and runners will talk about what it's like to be at various parts of their race, and so on. And so the same thing that's true for athletics can really be true for ourselves in planning for our finances. So we have an entire process that we walk readers through about creating this visual financial plan. And it begins with finding images, literal photographs. We have some included in the book, but frankly, you could really use any at all. You could use personal photos or tear sheets from magazines. We provide some basic sort of symbolic images in our book that we find most people resonate with in some level. And that's how we suggest that you begin creating this visual plan. And then we actually recommend that people go one step further by beginning to think about when they would like these things to happen in their life, whether it's sooner or later. And we call sooner 5 years or sooner, and later 5 years and after. And then the other question is, approximately how much money will this require? What do you need in terms of resources? Is it less or more? And with those variables, we actually coach readers to go through and create a little quadrant, a four box with less and more along the left side, sooner and later along the bottom. And now you have these four boxes. You start to move your pictures around, and very quickly and easily, frankly within 10 minutes, you can start to develop this visual financial plan that not only summarizes your goals, but actually, according to research, increases your chances that you'll create these for yourself and that you'll actually realize them.
So is this, for instance, if I dream of a cabin by a lake, I would cut out a magazine picture of a cabin and put it on my prosperity picture?
Exactly.
Okay.
And yes. It could be something as literal and specific as that, or it could be more general.
Okay.
Like, for example, maybe you pick a picture of a yin and yang symbol, you know, and that might mean life balance for you.
Okay.
Something along those lines. It's really, it could be interpreted any way you want. The only thing that's important is the way you would interpret it.
Got it. And then is this a sheet of paper or a poster? What do you do with it?
Yeah, so
I'll give that to Ellen, yeah.
Yeah, so you can do it on a poster board. It can be on maybe like a legal size paper. It really doesn't matter. The idea is that there's room for your images and that you can put it up somewhere where you can see it all the time. So, for example, my prosperity picture is hanging in my closet, so I can see it, you know, when I walk in and out a couple times a day. And that by doing that, where I'm really activating that part of my brain that reminds me about these goals. And what it helps to do is also cue me for when there's an opportunity up that I'm paying attention to it. For example, I have a picture of an airplane on mine, and it's in my quadrant that is for later and probably requires more money, and it relates to this trip around the world that I want to take for a year at some point in time. So now, because I look at that every day, when I hear someone who buys one of those tickets to go all the way around the world, I catch that and I start to ask more questions. Or I'm paying attention when a magazine might come into the house that has images of places that I want to go visit. And the interesting thing is really also how you can turn this into not just this visualization hoping that it will come in, but actually turning it into a way to create a financial plan for yourself.
Lisa, could you give us an example of something on your prosperity picture?
Sure. My husband and I have this idea of being flexible as we move, really not necessarily retirement, but pre-retirement. In the next several years, we have this idea of downsizing our home and being able to travel more while still working. I travel a great deal for work, so as long as I'm near an airport, I can be in many different places and do my work. And he is also working from home, and as long as he has sort of access to technology, he can do his work. So we have a picture of a plane. We both do on our prosperity pictures. And that, for us, is representative of, you know, making this move sooner rather than later. And again, as Ellen said, as I walk by that and look at it, it begins to condition my brain to wake up for ways to make that happen sooner, to look for people that I can work with now to make it happen, to start to take the steps that I need to bring that to fruition.
Got it. Now, in addition to creating a prosperity picture, what are the things that people can do today to start reaching their financial goals? And Ellen, why don't you start this one?
Sure. So to put some of this in context, it's especially given kind of the turmoil we are having or have been having really in the markets, the idea behind having a goals-based plan as opposed to just an investment-based plan can really help people move ahead towards their goals. So someone said to me earlier today, oh my gosh, people are so freaked out about what's happening in the market. They're like, you know, so anxious about it. And I started to think, wow, you know, if someone has really a long-term plan and they're checking their progress against how they're doing on their plan, it's much easier to be calmer during times like this. So that's one thing people can do is to start to have a plan that they put into place right away. Another thing that we recommend is that instead of budgeting, which we've never seen work really for anyone, is to create a prioritized spending plan. And so it's not that I'm suggesting that you don't pay any attention to where your cash is going. I think that's really great. But a budget is so restrictive. It's like diet. Like, who wants to do that, right? Feels like eating celery at a pizza party. It's no fun. But knowing where your cash is going and creating a prioritized spending plan can help you move towards your goals more quickly. So what I mean by that is to track what's flowing in and out, and then for each expenditure that you have, making a decision, is this an A, B, or C priority? Do you really value it? Most people are pretty unconscious about how they spend their money. And by doing this, we've seen people really have major changes in their life that felt so great. I mean, we had one woman who went through this process and realized that she was living in a house that she didn't really care about anymore. She was divorced. Her kids were grown. It was expensive. She had some debt. She was working in a family business she hated. And by going through this process, realized that if she changed that, if she sold her house, which she did, she could buy a small condo in a really beautiful area, pay off debt, downsize, get rid of a bunch of clutter in her life, and she changed her financial situation so much for the better that she was able to leave this family business that she hated and start her own new consulting firm.
Wow.
Yeah, so this process that most people avoid can be one of the most powerful things you can do to move you ahead towards your goals.
Mm-hmm. So a prioritized spending plan, how would that look different from a budget? What would it look like?
Well, it's analyzing. So a budget is saying, I think for most people, like, oh, I can only spend this much on clothes. And no one, I mean, rarely I've seen someone spend too much one month and spend less in another category. This is saying the reality is, okay, the last 12 months, this is what I spent in all these different categories. And then looking at each one and saying, yes, this is an A priority. For someone else, it might be, I love my home. It feeds my soul. So with that comes real estate taxes and maintenance and whatever else you spend on your home. But, you know, going to out for dinner five nights a week, I don't care about at all. And it might be better for me to eat at home and I could spend less money there. So it's going through each category and deciding, really, is it what you value?
Mm-hmm. And instructions for creating this prioritized spending plan are in your book.
Yes, and there's some appendices where we put all the categories there, and that can make it easy. And some people use online tools and then just go back and categorize them again, A, B, and C priorities, based on what you really value.
Got it. Now, you alluded to the news and the volatile markets. Obviously, it's been a very hair-raising start to the year. What do you suggest people do to stay resilient and get through the financial and market storms that are going on?
So this is Lisa. We advocate having both an inner strategy and an outer strategy to navigate all of the challenging news. And by inner strategy, what we mean is taking a minute to calm down. It sounds maybe a little unexpected, but taking a moment to breathe, quite literally, is one of the things that we talk about in our book about becoming what we call financially resilient. Taking a moment to regulate your breath, especially at those panicky moments. Taking the time to develop, if you haven't already done so, a meditation practice, and to do things like yoga, which are all proven ways to find your center, become calm, and from that center then of calmness and centeredness, being able to look outside and start to think through what any, you know, market movement or volatility means for you in more specific ways. One thing that we always say is that fear is not a financial strategy, right? Fear is not a helpful place to make any decisions or have any reactions really to what's going on. So this is a way to calm your fear, and it really begins with that. In terms of some outer solutions, we have what we call, you know, a lot of people have an emergency fund. That a lot of financial people will recommend having an emergency fund, which is several months' worth of expenses saved in case of a problem. We actually like to call that a solutions fund. So if something comes along that is not expected, there's a problem that you're not expecting, you have a solution for it. You have a way to address that. So one of the first things we can suggest to people if they're a little worried is to begin to make sure that they've got a solutions fund that's built up and have that in place. That in and of itself can give folks some peace of mind in the event that something, you know, unforeseen might happen. As Ellen just alluded to, being really clear on what your goals are, on what you need on a monthly or an annual basis in order to achieve your goals is much more helpful than worrying about what's happening with the market today. So the market can and will behave as it is. Sometimes it can be like a petulant child, and that's okay. That's the way the market works. If you're in touch with what you really need in order to live a full life, and make that your barometer, it's a much healthier way to go.
And I would just add to when Lisa was talking about breathing and meditation and why that's so important to reduce the fear, there's actually studies that have been done that when people are in financial crisis and major fear, their IQ can actually drop. So it's not that, like, people are in that situation because they're not bright. It's just when you're in incredible fear, it's almost impossible to make a good decision. So this may feel like kind of a mushy, soft recommendation, but it's incredibly practical because if you just think about any decisions you make when they're fear-based, they're usually not the best decisions you can be making.
Right. Now, I'm not telling you anything you didn't know, but there are obviously a lot of books on this subject on the market. Why did you feel there was a need for another personal finance book? What do you think is distinguishes Picture Your Prosperity?
Well, I would say that as a financial advisor who's been in this industry for, you know, more than 20 years, all the conversation that I see in my industry and through most of the books out there is very granular. It's very left-brain investment-focused. And it's leaving out this whole part of the way that people really react in terms of their money. You know, what you believe and what you say and what you think about your money has a huge impact on what shows up in your life. So it's said that we develop our attitudes and beliefs, our subconscious beliefs, from conception to age 7, and that includes your money beliefs. So the idea that we could combine a book that is looking at both our beliefs and giving you ways to implant really solid picture of what your goals really are, along with tactical strategies to make them happen, turns out is a really unique approach, which really shouldn't be. We feel like this is how everyone should be looking at their money first, instead of going into the details of investments, thinking about what's truly important to you, and then what do you need to do to make that happen?
Got it. Thank you. We're going to get back to our questions in a moment. Let me just add a quick reminder that we will be sharing highlights from today's call on Twitter. You can follow along and join the conversation at 10 Women, at Texas Women, at Mass Women, and in California at WTRMRK. And a reminder, today's class will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you register through Eventbrite, you will receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. And now let's return to our conversation with Ellen Rogan and Lisa King. I'd like to ask you both, how can couples use your book to build a happy money partnership? Ellen,
so,
why don't you start?
Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, so it's funny because couples can spend so much time kind of running their lives but not really talking much about money. And what we found is it can also be a stressful conversation. It's one of the number one causes of divorce. What we found incredible success with for couples is actually starting with creating prosperity pictures and sharing them with each other, and then possibly even creating a joint prosperity picture. So I will tell you that I feel like my husband and I have pretty good conversations about money. It's what I do for a living. But when I walk through the prosperity picture with him, I realized he had goals that we had never, ever talked about before. For example, one, he had a picture of a sailboat on his prosperity picture, and I asked him about that. He said, well, you know, I've always wanted to take a trip for a couple of weeks on a sailboat with friends in the Caribbean. It's like, really? I had no idea that was something that was important to him. You know, later, I told him that I hope he meant other friends because I get seasick, but not including me. But and I think that's telling for a couple of things. One, that we don't always take the time to have these conversations. And two, sometimes actually going through the process of creating a prosperity picture can bring up goals that you didn't even know you had for yourself versus the typical financial goals that are often talked about, like when do you want to retire, you know, do you want to fund your kids' education, those types of things.
Lisa, what have you observed how couples can build a happy money partnership?
You know, having regular financial dates is a wonderful thing for couples to do. And on those dates, and you know, you can really make it fun. You can truly make it like a date night and do something special or open a bottle of wine or whatever you like to do. And have a conversation like the one Ellen just described can be, that in and of itself can be an incredibly enriching thing to do that most couples don't, and change a lot in terms of the way they're approaching their future together. And in addition to that, there are some tactical things that it's really great for couples to tackle. For example, we find that in many couples, one or the other takes the primary responsibility for the finances, which is absolutely fine as long as both parties know the basics, you know the state of the union, if you will. So what is the basic situation? Are the insurance policies in place the way they should be? Is the estate plan in place the way it should be? What are the basic numbers? And also things like, let's say there's an online account somewhere, and both people know that. What's the password for the online account? If there's a safety deposit box, where's the key? You know, these are the little details that it's really critical that both people know. And unfortunately, if they don't know that right today, what typically happens is they're forced to find out when there's something difficult or challenging going on, because you know that brings it to the forefront. The person that normally takes charge of it isn't able to for some reason, and that's the last time in life that anyone wants to have to worry about these sorts of things. So just having a healthy communication about the basic building blocks of your financial plan is really important.
That's really interesting, because I think most people wouldn't think of passwords or safe deposit box or estate plans as a key to romance, but you're saying it's really a key to communication. And
that is what
will help couples get through the money differences that inevitably arise in a relationship.
And it's really a way to truly take care of your partner. I mean, I sadly had a client whose husband passed away very suddenly. She was very aware of what was going on, but she didn't have the passwords to get into, and everything was paperless. It took her months to get access to that account because the mutual fund company wouldn't let her get that information without all the right documents. So it's a way of truly taking care of the people that you love.
Got it. Now, you assert in Picture Your Prosperity that giving can make you rich. And that's really an unusual idea. I'm wondering, Lisa, if you could explain.
Yeah, this is a fascinating area. There's been a great deal of research that talks about the power of giving, the power of generosity. There was a book called The Longevity Project that was published several years ago. And in that book, it was an 80-year study, if you can believe that, of a large sample group, followed these people for 80 years and measured them across all sorts of areas. And one of the key findings was that those people who had engaged in philanthropic work, giving money, giving of their time, giving of their talent, actually outlived those that did not. There was that discernible, as an example, of a health and longevity benefit, but it also, ironically, has a financial aspect too. I mean, I'm going to turn that over to Ellen to kind of describe the financial boomerang that we see.
Yeah, so most people would say that, oh, when I have more money, I'll give. Well, one study showed that actually people who gave more money actually made more money. So the way this research worked is imagine you have two families with the same demographics, same income level, same education level, same part of the country. The difference was that one family gave $100 more that year than the other family. Well, it turns out in this research that the family that gave more money actually made $350 more that year. And this shows, like, it's not just people, but countries that are more generous, like the United States, have higher GDPs, gross domestic product. And the other way this works, so besides, like, from a, wasn't that interesting, like, you wouldn't think you would be able to give and have more money. If you just think about it energetically and think about a time like we're in now that's really scary, if you're holding on so tightly to what you have because you're afraid to give, so imagine like making a fist, you're clenching onto what you have, how can you possibly receive? Right? Because all your attention, as Lisa was saying before, the way you program your brain is, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, where when you give and help other people, it allows you to loosen that grip and see opportunities that are out there for you and money actually flows back to you.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, I want to go back to just the big picture of prosperity here and ask you, what are the deeper questions that we can ask ourselves as we begin on this journey of picturing our prosperity?
That's a great question. We finish our book, actually, with this idea of building a lifetime of prosperity, of true prosperity. And so what we really recommend doing is asking people to think about what really drives them. What is your passion? Why are you here? You know, what is it that that causes you to get up in the morning? What are some things that you'd like to do in life if only you could? In the book, we actually talk about having your light shine. What are ways that your light can shine? And as you're kind of moving throughout the world and navigating your own finances, how is that connecting? And so, for example, many people will give. I think the number is around 80% of Americans will give some level, some kind of financial donation throughout the course of a year. But it's really beyond giving. It's what kinds of motions are you putting in place when you begin to do that? How is that kind of changing what your role is in the world? How are you making an impact? And how can your money be a tool to help you do whatever it is that you want to do? So it gets to be a bit of a philosophical question, but one that's really exciting.
And I would add what motivates Lisa and I, which carried us through writing this whole entire book and made the process truly joyful and felt easy, is that what we see is this incredible opportunity, especially for women. That, you know, we love the idea of women getting so comfortable with their own finances and so really in their power around their money that they stop asking the question of, am I going to be okay, and move on to, how can I make a difference in the world with my money? I mean, there's a statistic that $25 trillion is going to be transferring into the control of women in this country in the next 20 years. That's an enormous number. And if just 10% of that were used for positive change, world hunger could end. Every child could be educated. Research money for autism, Alzheimer's, and breast cancer could increase 1,000-fold. So we have the opportunity to really change the course of the world. And, you know, that's what our big purpose is and, you know, why we love being out there talking about this subject so much.
Great. Now, we've got time for one last question, and I'd like to address this question to both of you. And many of the women who attend our conferences for women are at the beginning of their careers, and they may not have the higher income or the extra resources, and they might view financial planning as a luxury. And I'm wondering, how feasible is it for people who are just starting out or who have lower income or fewer resources to initiate this conversation about financial planning?
You know, that's a great question, and it is never, ever too early, and there's never too little money to start the financial planning process. So, you know, even a few dollars a day, quite literally, $6 or $7 a day over time, invested in even a modest type of investment with a modest level of return, can turn into a significant amount of money over time. So it's the beauty of compound interest. Einstein was once asked what the most amazing phenomena was that he saw in his career, and he said that it was compound interest. He said it was fantastic when you looked at it on paper and even better when you did it. And so actually someone who is young and just starting out has a huge advantage because they have time on their side. And so I'm always encouraging people to show these compound interest charts to their children and show them to their young adult children and start to really think about the power that can come from an early start.
And I would add, if I had to say three things that if people did that would set them on the course to reaching their financial goals, would be to understand the importance of what you think and what you say about your money, that it really has an impact. And then from a tactical kind of left brain perspective, just as Lisa said, start saving on a regular automatic basis. And the third thing would be to give on an automatic basis. So put away a portion of your money each week or month to then later be given to people or causes or whatever is important to you. And I truly believe that if you do those three things, you'll be on course to meet any of your financial goals.
Great. Well, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank Ellen Robin and Lisa King, and thank you to our audience for listening to today's teleclass.